Okay, let's start lecture 19. Glad to see so many here. First day after Easter, and everybody's here already, huh? This week, we will be finishing off part two of the course. So today is the last lecture specifically on special relativity. So we're going back now to part one of the course. And we are going to formulate our mechanical problems in terms of Lagrangians and potentially Hamiltonians in the relativistic case. And we'll show that we were able to do that, which is interesting. But we'll also discuss some complications that appear now. Then on Wednesday, tomorrow, we will start part three of the course, which is the part with electromagnetism that you find in the title of the course. And I'll start by repeating Maxwell's equations. Let's start by a lecture which you were supposed to have learned in electromagnetism, but maybe you haven't. So we'll see. The problem set this week is more relativistic problems, more relativity and more four vectors, so we get to practice a little bit more on the four vectors. Don't think I want to say more about that. Little recap of where we were before I start the Lagrangian business. We had, before Easter, introduced the four fourths. So this is extending the force of ordinary Newtonian mechanics. We define it as the proper time derivative of the form momentum. So dp mu, d tau, up here on this slide. That's the definition of the four force. And then it turns out that we can show that that is equal to m times the four acceleration. So this is the four acceleration. Or if I want to write it out explicitly in terms of gammas and forces and velocities, it's this expression over here, which contains F vector, which is the relativistic force. So it's not the non-relativistic force, it's the relativistic force. So it is the time derivative in some reference frame, so some time variable here, of the relativistic momentum P. And I pointed out to you that this whole expression then means that you're involving two different gammas. Well, not different gammas, it's the same gamma. Two instances of the gamma. One in the relativistic momentum P here, which is in the relativistic force. So it's hidden inside of this thing. And then there is a gamma here in the expression for the four force. And the reason that there are two gammas that appear is that because forces are related to accelerations, I have two time derivatives. And that means that I, in my equations, have to take into account two time dilation factors. So there's two gammas. And then we showed that for the specific situation of an electromagnetic field, we can write down the four force from an electromagnetic field on this form that we have at the bottom of the slide, Q, F mu nu, U nu. Where u nu is the four velocity, which is sort of to be expected since electromagnetism is dependent on velocities. And then f mu nu is what we call the electromagnetic field strength tensor. It is given in terms of the four potential, a mu a, or a nu. And notice that this a is definitely not the same as this A. So this is four acceleration, and this is four potential. So two different four vectors. So there's quite a neat, simple little form here of the equation, and this is what we call a covariant form equation, because it's written in terms of four vectors. So the shape of the equation, if you want to, or the structure of the equation, it remains the same in all reference frames. And if I know what these four vectors are in some reference frame, I can find them in any other reference frame by just doing a Lorentz transformation of them. So this sort of embodies Einstein's statement of the laws of physics being the same in all reference frames. There were some things we didn't show here. For example, I didn't show where this f mu nu comes from. I didn't show that it had to have that exact form that we wrote down, but this we will do in part three of the course. Right. So, let's go. Oh, yeah, I forgot to do one thing. Okay. So I have to say a few words about what we're doing today. We now need to write the Lagrangian and the Hamiltonian in terms of only Lorentz vectors and Lorentz scalars. So this is just continuing this thing about the laws of physics being the same in all reference frames. So if this is to work out, I have to be able to write the Lagrangian in terms of four vectors. I will show that that's relatively easy. And after I've done that, I will do an example with a free particle, meaning a particle where there's no potential. And I will find the solution. And the solution is not surprising at all. And then I will do the same example once more. And I will amazingly get the same answer again. And then, just for good measure, I will do the example another time and yet another different way and get the same answer. Actually, the last time I'll do this, I'll just leave the answer up to you, but you're going to get the same answer. And the reason that we're going to end up doing it multiple times is it turns out that we have some choice in how to do it. I'll explain later. And then at the end of today, we will do an example with a particle in an electromagnetic field to actually use a potential. But there's going to be lots of free particle solutions. So what we want is a covariant Lagrangian. And since what we're really relying on in Lagrange-Hamilton formalism is the action, we want a covariant action. Now, it seems reasonable to define this in the following way. It's reasonable to find a Lorentz invariant scalar Lagrangian as function L, which is a function of the path of the particle, x mu, as a function of the proper time tau, u mu, the four velocity, as a function of proper time, and the proper time. Based on the proper time of the particle, tau, and its path, or world blind. X mu of tau. So when I say world line, I mean the sort of line that I can draw in a Minkowski diagram that shows how the particle is moving. And the world line is a function of the proper time. And its velocity, u mu of tau. Just remind you what these Minkowski diagrams look like. If I draw it in one dimension, the path of a particle would be something like this. Okay? It needs to be in this upper corner here because of the restrictions of the speed of light. For positive time, I need to be within this 90-degree angle here, otherwise I'm traveling faster than the speed of light. So a world line is some sort of path here, x mu, and the time that we measure it is the proper time. What I'm saying here is that I believe this is going to work out if my Lagrangian is Lorentz invariant scalar, meaning it does not change under Lorentz transformations. Because if it doesn't, right, it's the same in all reference frames. And then everything I should get out of that should either be invariant or should transform correctly according to the reference frames. And it turns out this indeed does work. One thing I want to point out here, and that has to do with this path, x mu of tau, if this is supposed to be real motion, this has to be, the square, x squared, has to be larger than or equal to zero. So it's time-like. So it's time-like if the particle is massive or light-like, meaning this is equal to zero, if particle is massless. This is just a restriction, because if that wasn't true, I'd be traveling faster than the speed of light. So for motions of real particles, it's either time-like or light-like. Of course, a general x vector, x mu, that isn't the path of a particle, but for example, maybe two events in space that are not connected by a particle traveling, that x squared might be negative. But for real particle traveling, that cannot be negative. So, this formulation is what works. It looks a lot like the one that we learned in the beginning for Lagrangians. We have some generalized coordinates, q's, and some generalized velocities, q dots. Only now, instead of having the x, y, and z coordinates and the velocities in the x, y, and z direction of the particle, these have now four components. So we have time in here as well. Time as a function of time. T as a function of tau, where T is the time in some reference frame that is looking at the particle moving, and tau is the time on board the particle moving. So those things depend on each other now. And here we have this curious U0, which is just the speed of light, or gamma times the speed of light. Okay, a few comments on this. It turns out to be a little bit more complicated, and the choice of proper time as the thing that parameterizes all of this is not unique. And we will not discuss this much here, but we can choose what we call a general affine parameter. For those of you that know a lot of math, you will know that affine parameterizations is just simply linear transformation of the original parameterization. So it's, I could choose some t prime, which is a tau plus b, that's a linear transformation of the time. But for a physicist, somebody doing general relativity, affine parameterization means both that it's a linear transformation like this and that the velocity and acceleration are perpendicular to each other. Notice that this perpendicularity requirement can be fulfilled by the fact that the velocity is zero, which would be in the instantaneous inertial reference frame, where tau lives. But if you want to move to a different variable than tau, you have to assure this thing. This is automatic for the instantaneous inertial reference frame because the velocity is always zero. This is used a lot in general relativity, that you change the parameterization of the motion. Why do you change the parameterization of motion? That is point two. We cannot use tau for a massless particle. Then we have to face the issue. So, why can we not do that? Well, for a massless particle, this thing is always zero. And I will show you how to squeeze in a different parameter later to move from tau to some other parameter. Furthermore, the structure of L, so what we choose to parameterize the motion in terms of is one thing, but also the structure of L is not unique. Multiple choices give same equations of motion. And that is why I'm going to show you three different ways of doing the free particle. I'm going to give you three different choices of L that gives the same equations of motion. You should not be too surprised by this. Remember, L prime, which is a constant times an old L plus B, gives the same equation of motion. Multiplying the Lagrangian by something or adding a constant to it doesn't change anything. In fact, we also showed that having a total time derivative and adding that doesn't change anything. So L and L prime have same equations of motion. Yes, didn't I have 4 points? Yes, I had the 4 points. While it was relatively easy to extend the Lagrangians in non-relativistic physics into multiple particles, where you just created a big Lagrangian that contained multiple terms, we can no longer do this if we have special relativity, because tau specifies the proper time of one particle. And this doesn't, I don't have one parameterization time anymore if I have multiple particles. That wasn't a problem in non-relativistic physics, because there was only one time. There was a global universal time in non-relativistic physics. But we've left that, so I don't have that anymore. So I get into lots of trouble as soon as I try to solve any problem with more than one particle. But under these limitations, if I start from this Lagrangian, I can write down the action right away. So that is just the proper time integral of the Lagrangian. Between two proper times, tau I and tau f, the start and the end of the motion. And we can use Hamilton's principle. And we can find the extremal values of the world line, or the path, so find the extremal values of the world line. X mu tau that give delta s equal to 0. And because that method of minimizing s over the path, parameterized path in here, is just mathematical. We talked about this when we did the derivation. When we show that this is equivalent to Lagrange's equation, that derivation is just mathematical, so it can just as easily be applied to this thing, getting the same result out again. So this results in the equations of motion. So the time derivative of the partial derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to the velocity, or the velocity components, minus TL T x mu equals 0. For mu equals 0, 1, 2, and 3. So this is Lagrange's equation for the relativistic situation. And I'm not going to bother proving that, because the proof is completely identical to the one we already did for non-relativistic problems. Yes?
Is it probably the proper time instead of the...
Oh, sorry. Yes. This must be proper time. Or whatever thing you've parameterized with. As I said, you can choose different parameterizations, and if you do, then whatever that parameter is should be there. Okay. So if you write down this equation, and you solve it, it will provide x0 of tau, x1 of tau, x2 of tau, and x3 of tau, which specifies the motion in terms of the proper time. Although it's, of course, weird, because if I write down in Cartesian coordinates, this first thing is t of tau. But it's then the time in some reference frame that you've decided on as a function of the proper time. And that would solve like problems like the twin paradox, etc., because that would give you the time that passed in one frame, t, as a function of the time that passed for the particle tau. And this is then just, of course, the ordinary x-coordinate, and this is the y-coordinate, and this is the z-coordinate. Yeah, okay. Yeah, question, good.
Should the time be multiplied by c?
Oh, yeah, well, I could divide by c. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to keep it like this. Yeah. Let's take a break here before I start the first free particle example. So now I want to do my example, well, the first of multiple examples of the free particle. So again, a free particle is a particle that doesn't feel any potential. And I guess we all remember what the solution is. If you have a free particle, it also, according to Newton, continues in a straight line with a constant velocity. That's what we're expecting. Now, I'm going to guess at a Lagrangian. So assuming the Lagrangian one half m and then u mu, so the four velocity contracted with itself. Multiple things to say about that. Is this what I wanted? And Lorentz invariant scalar? Yes, it is. Because this contraction is a Lorentz invariant scalar. It's the contraction of two four vectors, which is Lorentz invariant. And m is just a constant. And half is just a constant. So that's true. Has the right units, if you check, because the units of the four velocity is velocity squared. So it has the units of energy, because it's like a kinetic energy. And hopefully you also feel like me that this is very natural, right? Because in ordinary mechanics, this was one half m v squared, right? So it looks just like the corresponding thing. And it turns out it works. And it's quite simple to show that it works. let's do what we learned to do in the first part of the course. Let us find the ingredients of Lagrange's equation. And I start with the partial derivative of this Lagrangian with respect to the position, which is zero because there's no positions in there. And then I need to find the partial derivatives of the Lagrangian with respect to the velocities. And then I actually have to do a little bit of thinking, but it's not very hard. I get mu mu. If you're confused by that statement, I would encourage you very much to check this equation by selecting, for example, u equals 1 or something, right? Because then I get u1 squared, and then I want to take the derivative with respect to some mu. That is 0 unless this mu is the same thing, and what I'm left with then is this with the index down. So if I wrote like u1, u1, I'm taking derivative with respect to u1 upstairs, I get the u1 with the 1 downstairs. So it's supposed to be downstairs here. And the fact that I get 2, right, is because this is a square for each of the terms. So that removes that factor. So it's actually for differentiation with 4 vectors like this acts in a natural way. If I have squares, I'm going to get 2s, and the 2s are going to cancel other things. So these are the 2 ingredients I get, but then I can immediately conclude from Lagrange's equation that the proper time derivative of m u mu is 0. Or the proper time derivative of the 4 momentum is 0. Thus, p mu equals mu mu is a conserved quantity. That is a constant. And what does p contain? P contained, as the zeroth component, the energy, gamma mc squared. And as its vector component, for relativistic momentum, gamma mv. And those are conserved. So in this situation, you have a motion that has a conserved relativistic momentum. And that is just straight line motion that we expected. So this works. This gives the right equations of motion. You might, of course, find it slightly worrying that at this point I'm just guessing at Lagrangians. I'm getting them right. So I can actually show you that this reduces to the sort of Lagrangian you would be expecting, and that it reduces to a Lagrangian, that is the kinetic energy minus the potential energy. I can show you that, and I will in a little bit. But I wanted to start out this way because it turns out that in practice, this is what we do. We guess at Lagrangians. So why do we do that? Well, we do that because we, in physics, what we do is that we model things. And if I want to invent some sort of grand new theory of theoretical physics, my way of inventing a theory is to write down a Lagrangian and see what it leads to. And then I check whether this Lagrangian leads to equations of motion that that are correct according to experiment. So this is actually the usual thinking in theoretical physics. We start with the Lagrangian. And then we use Hamilton's principle. We get the equations of motion. And then we check against the experiment. Of course, we kind of know what we're going to get, right? So we know that we know the structures that would lead to something reasonable. Okay, but now let me try to do this in a different way, where you'll see that it all ends up in familiar territory with kinetic and potential energies. And I don't know if you've seen it already, but if you looked at my original expression, you might say that this is bloody stupid because I can do this in a much simpler way. This contraction, do you remember what it is? Yes? C squared. Yeah. U mu contracted with itself, so U squared is C squared. This was something we showed, before Easter, quite some lectures ago. So, since this contraction really is C squared, we formulate the Lagrangian as L equals 1/2 mc squared. That's weird, isn't it? That doesn't seem to make any sense. Is this the constant? But hang on, I promise you this is actually going to lead somewhere. The action is then so I'm just starting with the action that I have on top of that blackboard. And I put in my expression for this Lagrangian. That's just constant, so I can move that outside of the integral sign. But what I do in here now is that I'm going to move away from the proper time and to the time t of some reference frame. In order to do that, I need a change of variables, like so. And my times now have to be the corresponding ti and tf in that reference frame. Tau dt, we know what is. Or actually, the form that we often saw earlier in the course is dt over d tau. It's just gamma. So there's a gamma hiding inside of this, like so, which is actually going to give me all of the dynamics of the problem. So we have an alternative Lagrangian. One half mc squared over gamma. Now, all I've done is rewritten stuff, so it should lead to the same equations of motion. But this is an alternative Lagrangian. This Lagrangian, and implicitly then, this Lagrangian is a non-invariant quantity under Lorentz transformations. This thing is not an invariant under Lorentz transformations because there's a velocity here, and the velocity is different in the different frames. So these are two different formulations of the same problem. One that has a Lorentz invariant, a Lorentz scalar Lagrangian, and one that does not. But should lead to the same equations of motion. So this is not Lorentz invariant. The usual Lagrange equation and now we just go back to the first part of the course. The usual Lagrange equation says that the time derivative of the partial derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to the velocities, and I'm calling the velocities xi dot here, minus partial derivative of L with respect to the positions xi is supposed to be 0. So in three dimensions, I is an index from 1 to 3. Now, I can calculate those things for this non-invariant Lagrangian. dl, dxi, all of those are 0 because there's no reference to the coordinates. While the partial derivatives of the Lagrangian with respect to the velocity, well, there definitely are velocities in this Lagrangian that are hidden inside of gamma. So I need to find the derivative of 1 over gamma. And 1 over gamma is the square root of 1 minus v squared over c squared. So these are the components of this v. I use the chain rule of differentiation. I get 1 half from the square root. The derivative of the core is minus 2 times vi c squared. And then I get this, subtracting 1 from the power, I get 1 minus v squared over c squared to minus 1 half. Lots of things cancel. There's 1 half, this one, the c squareds. And I am left with minus 1 half m vi. And then this thing is just gamma. Or written in a different way, minus 1 half gamma m vi. So we have, inserting into Lagrange's equation, that this thing is conserved. And where I have, on purpose, just removed the minus 1 half, because I can multiply by minus 2 on both sides of that equation and it changes nothing. Right? It's absorbed by 0. Right? It doesn't matter. If this thing is conserved, then gamma m vi and so on is conserved. So that's conserved. And that is just saying the same thing, because this is just the relativistic momentum. So it's saying the same thing. The relativistic momentum is conserved. But it does show that I probably shouldn't choose this as the Lagrangian. I should probably choose minus 2 times this as the Lagrangian. Because if I'd multiplied this by minus 2, so that this would be minus mc squared over gamma, then this whole calculation would have ended up with nothing in front of this thing, just gamma mvi, and then that would mean conserved. Okay? Should that worry us that I have to multiply by minus Two. Of course I erased it, but no. Because as I commented on in the beginning of this lecture, if I multiply the Lagrangian by a constant, or add and subtract a constant to it, nothing changes. I get the same equations of motion. And I would also like to remind you that there are different conventions for the four vectors, and that the book uses a convention where u squared is minus c squared. So if you use that convention, and it's just a convention, it will give exactly the same physics, but if you use that convention, you would have a minus sign here. You wouldn't have the two, but you'd have a minus sign. So all of that is just convention stuff. It gives the same motion. So in fact, what we do is we typically define the non-invariant Lagrange equation. So we typically write the Lorentz non-invariant Lagrangian for a free particle as L equals minus mc squared over gamma. And with a potential we write L equals minus mc squared over gamma minus V over gamma. Yes. Now, if I make that choice, what I can do is that I can write out the gamma here as a series in terms of v squared over c squared. And what I get is 1 minus 1 half v squared over c squared plus higher order terms. This is just writing gamma, or 1 rather, 1 over gamma. If I multiply out that, I get minus mc squared plus 1 half mv squared plus higher order terms. So in fact, I get the non-relativistic kinetic energy here for the free particle. But what about this thing in front? Minus mc squared. Well, that is just a constant. And as I just said a few minutes ago, constants added to the Lagrangian doesn't change anything. So it doesn't actually have any physical effect. It will disappear immediately when you put it into Lagrange's equation because it's a constant, so it disappears when you're doing the partial derivatives. So this choice of the Lagrangian with that specific normalization of the Lagrangian, so that I have minus mc squared over gamma, that means that the Lagrangian is indeed in the low velocity limit is indeed a non-relativistic kinetic energy. One little more thing there, then we'll have a break. The Hamiltonian This is the definition of the Hamiltonian. Slightly different notation than what we're used to because we typically use q dot here, right? But q dot is just the velocity. And we use the derivative with respect to q dot, but again, q dot is just the velocity. So one of the velocity components, I am implicitly assuming a sum here over I. So this is the Hamiltonian from its definition. dl/dvi, we have shown here, this is dl/dvi. We have shown that that is equal to gamma mvi, modulo this fact that we multiplied by minus 2. So this is gamma vi times vi minus l. And I can write that as p squared over gamma m minus l. What I do then is that I just multiply and divide by gamma m on this factor, and I have the relativistic momentum component squared divided by gamma m. And I now insert my Lagrangian, taken from up there. So I get plus mc squared over gamma. I can bring this on a common factor by multiplying by m on both sides of the fraction here. So I get p squared plus m squared c squared over gamma m. And I can multiply everywhere with c squared. And then I get p squared c squared plus m squared c to the fourth power over gamma m c squared. And you guys see where this is going? This is now e, or if I want to, the square root of p squared c squared plus m squared c to the fourth. So I've shown now that with these choices, everything is fine. This free particle has the expected relativistic energies and the sort of consistent kinetic energy in the low energy limit. It has a Hamiltonian that is the total energy of the particle. And I could, of course, have gone the other way. I could have started with this and saying, I know what the energy of this thing is supposed to be. What is my Lagrangian in that case? And I would have ended up with that conclusion. But do note that I have done this in two different ways. It's barely visible here, but there was another way of doing it, starting from this thing. And in that case, we were Lorentz invariant all the time. But we get the same equations of motion. Maybe we take a little break here. Let's take 10 minutes, and I will do the free particle yet again. So it's time to finish off this part of the course. But I still have a couple of things I wanted to point out about this bloody free particle. I'm going to go backwards now. So I'm going to find another alternative Lagrangian. And the way I'm going to go now, I'm going to go toward general relativity for a short little sort of dip of our toes into general relativity. I'm going to start with the action. And I'm going to write it as the integral of the Lagrangian that we just discussed, this non-Lorentz invariant quantity, like so. Now I'm going to go backwards, and I'm going to go from the time t back to the proper time. Minus mc squared, that is just a constant. But dt over gamma, that's just d tau. All I used here is that dt over d tau is gamma. This expression is interesting. So this says that the action, which is a function of the path, is just the integral of the proper time. Even if I move the c here, I get an element that is the infinitesimal line element in Minkowski space for an object that is at rest. I'm going to sidetrack the argument here a little bit and say that this thing means that we can find a reference frame where the initial positions are in the same place. Does that sound strange? I can find a reference frame, I'm saying, where the starting point and the end point of any motion is in the same place. Wait, surely that can't be true. But it is. Let me draw it for you. This is a Minkowski diagram in some reference frame. If my points, the start point and end point, are drawn into the diagram like this, all I do is I draw a line through them, and I know I can boost to that system. I can boost to this coordinate system, where they are both on the same time axis, so they're in the same position, but at different times. You might argue that I made a little bit of trickery here because it just happened that my line through these two points goes through the origin. But if that wasn't the case, I just need to redefine my zero point for the time, move the x-axis up and down, which I can do. I'm free to do that. And then they will align on a new time axis. This is a bit... because these events, the 2 points on the world line of a particle, a real particle moving, you can always find a reference frame where those are in the same physical position, but at different times. And what's the connection to this? It's because if I go to that system, so this is S and this is S prime, if I move from S to S prime in systems, my Minkowski diagram, my new one, drawn in S prime instead, my two events are on the axis like this, right? And what is the distance between them? Well, it's this thing. It's the integral of all of the tau's, because the object is at rest in this thing. It doesn't move in the x-coordinate. It's always at rest. So it's just a summation of this thing. And what minimizing S here now is doing is that it is minimizing this distance. But it wasn't necessary. I shouldn't have drawn a line, because it isn't necessarily a line. It is a some sort of curve between those 2 points. I know that the start time and the end time are always on the same axis, because that's the statement that those physical positions are the same. But what is the minimal distance in this? Well, it's a straight line. And that's minimizing this. And that also shows that this motion has to be constant velocity motion. Because if I take a straight line here, and I go back to this system, then my points end up on a straight line, which is a constant velocity movement. Okay, what's the connection here? And this is not part of what you'll be tested on the exam, but what is the connection to general relativity? Well, it's always finding these motions that are shortest, have the shortest world lines. This is what you do when you find motion in a curved space. You find the shortest world lines. In general spaces, which are not Minkowski and flat, it's more complicated, right? Because the space itself curves. So this is not, the straight line here is not necessarily the correct solution. Okay, so that was bit of a sort of side thing. Let's go back and focus on this thing. And now I'm going to use the infinitesimal line element to write this as minus mc squared integral from tau I to tau f 1 over c square root of dx mu dx mu. Because ds squared, which I can write as dx mu dx mu, that is c squared d tau squared. So I just used c d tau, took the square root of that, and got that expression. This typically makes people very uncomfortable, because I now have the square root of infinitesimals in an integral. But this is only apparently, oops, I got to cancel one of my c's, so this is minus mc. Like so. And I'm now going to make a change of variables. Sorry, this should be d's, of course. So I pulled out a d lambda squared from that square root. And I'm saying now that I'm changing my time variable. I'm making a transformation of my time variable to lambda. And this is what I meant by affine parameterizations. I can change how I parameterize the motion. Because the parameterization we've been using today up to now has been we're looking at the x and y and z coordinates and even the time coordinates as a function of the proper time. But I can do all sorts of things with the proper time. I can use a different clock that moves at half speed or something, whatever, right? I can just redefine what I mean by my parameterization. And that is what this function is doing, lambda of tau, something else. And then I can take that lambda outside of this thing, and I get that Lagrangian instead. And I interpret this as my Lagrangian, well, times minus mc. And I can do this for any parameter lambda. So that my positions now are a function of lambda. And it gives the same solution. If you want to see how that works out, look in the book. We don't have time to do it, unfortunately. But it does work out to be the same solutions. So that my main purpose of what I've been doing now after the break was just to show you that it's possible to take this expression and reformulate its parameterization into a different parameter. And this is quite a neat trick. This can certainly be done in non-relativistic physics as well. If you don't want the ordinary time parameter, you can reparameterize. It doesn't matter. All you need to parameterize your position is a monotonic function. So you can choose any monotonic function you want. Sometimes useful. So you get a different parameterization in terms of a different parameter. And for some problems, this is necessary. I told you you couldn't use tau, the proper time, for something traveling at light speed. And the solution is to move to a different coordinate. But we're not going to do those kinds of problems on the exam. This is more GR. What I want to do at the end, 10 minutes, is to look at a Lagrangian which actually has a potential. So covariant Lagrangian for a charge Q in an electromagnetic field. And now I'm going to do my guesswork. I'm simply saying now that this Lagrangian is the free particle covariant Lagrangian. This is the one we started with today. So this is a Lorentz invariant scalar plus Q U mu A mu. Where U mu is the four velocity and A mu is the four potential. And the four potential was the scalar potential divided by C and the vector potential A vector. And now what I'm going to do is that I'm going to plug this into our covariant version of Lagrange's equation, and I'm going to find the equations of motion. If I assume that this is the correct Lagrangian. So in Lagrange's equations, covariant form, we have, first of all, the derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to the coordinates, x mu. There's no x mu in here, which was we talked about for the free particle. But in here, there is an x mu because the four potential here is potentially dependent on x, the position. So these things are x dependent. And to avoid clashes of symbols, I change my index variable here to nu. Now, the velocity is not position dependent. That is a free parameter. So I can write this using the particular differentiation notation as q u nu d mu a nu. I do nothing more, because I don't know the form of A, so I can't do anything more with it without specifying it. The next part of the Lagrangian is the derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to the four velocity, like so. I have form velocity here and here. The first term is the same as the one that we use for the free particle, that is just mu. And the second term, take the derivative with respect to A mu, what I'd be left with is crap. I mean, was that your point that I made an index error?
Yeah, the one in the delta.
Yeah, the problem was that I wanted to start with it downstairs.
Okay.
And then it's correct.
Yeah.
I was just being strategic. I was being strategic because this mu is downstairs, so I would like everything to be down, because I will now remove that. Because I'm taking the derivative with respect to u mu down, so I'm left with qa. Then that should be upstairs, like so. So these are my two ingredients to the Lagrangian. And putting them into Lagrange's equation gives d d tau, because we're now in the covariant form again, of m u mu plus q a mu. So I'm going to find this derivative. M u mu, that is just the form momentum. U mu. This thing, I get q d a mu d tau. This is the force by definition. And this second term, I can rewrite by changing the what I differentiate with respect to, is I differentiate with respect to x nu instead. And I'm running out of space here, so let me write it above. K mu plus q d nu. Should be upstairs, a mu. And dx nu d tau, that's just the definition of the four velocity, like so. So now I can put it all together. So So this was the derivative with respect to position of the Lagrangian. This was with respect to velocity. Then we took the time derivative of this again, with respect to proper time, and got this expression. So now I put it into the Lagrangian. Into Lagrangian's equation. K mu from here, and now I take this part and that part and move them to the right over to the zero side in Lagrange's equation, and I get Q u nu d mu a nu. That is this bit moved to the right, there's a minus sign in front of that, so when you move it to the right, it becomes a plus sign. And then this thing moved to the right, that gets a minus sign in front of it. Minus Q D mu A mu U mu. And I can write this, well, you can first pull out U nu, so I get d mu a nu minus d nu a mu. But then I recognize that this is an expression I've seen before. This is f mu nu. So that is the equation of motion I end up with after a little bit of work. The four force is equal to q u nu f mu nu. But this we saw before the Easter break, that is the actual equation of motion in the relativistic case for a particle in an electromagnetic field. So my guess here was indeed correct. So this is just to get a little bit of practice with the four vectors and to demonstrate that all of this is actually consistent. I can actually get the correct equations of motion out of this. And I have now revealed what the covariant form of the Lagrangian for a particle in an electromagnetic field is. It is this thing, where this plays the role of the kinetic energy, which is seen today, and this is now the potential. Yeah. Okay, I ran out of time today, but that's okay. I was supposed to talk about the midterm evaluations, but we're going to have to postpone that until tomorrow. So this is actually the end of part two of the course. So tomorrow we're starting part three. And as I told you, I'll basically be repeating Maxwell's laws tomorrow, which are stuff that we're going to be using for the whole rest of the term. So it's going to be kind of useful. Okay, but we stop here for today.